Hello and welcome to the Stansberry Investor Hour. I'm Dan Ferris. I'm the editor of Extreme Value and the Ferris Report, both published by Stansberry Research.
And I'm Corey McLaughlin, editor of the Stansberry Daily Digest. Today we talk with Austin Root, Chief Investment Officer of Stansberry Asset Management.
Austin is a great investor and an old friend of ours. He used to work with us at Stansberry Research. So let's listen to him spin his magic. He's a brilliant, sophisticated, level-headed guy, and you should write down all his advice. I promise you it will be very, very good. So let's do it right now. Let's talk with Austin Root. Let's do it right now. Austin, welcome back to the show. Good to see you again.
Thanks. Thanks so much for having me. Great seeing both of you. This is a real treat.
Yeah, and it was good seeing you at our recent conference in Las Vegas. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, likewise. I thought it was a lot of fun. I thought it was particularly valuable in terms of the information, too. I mean, these things are always good, but I felt like this time there was a nice mix of things to think about right now and then things to sort of structure the way you invest sort of over the long term and improve that as well.
Do you have I have a favorite or two presentations. Do either of you guys have one or two?
I do. Maybe I'll go first. It was a Moneyball Vegas, right? So I thought that Porter interviewing Michael Lewis was incredible. I love that book. But then to have Billy Beane there as well to talk about it, I think for me, that probably was my favorite presentation, because Billy Beane talked about creating a baseball team using analytics and trying to do it sort of on the best risk-adjusted basis, the way that I and you and we try to create an investment portfolio. So I really took some of those lessons. Moneyball has always been an interesting business book, but hearing it from them and particularly Billy, I took a lot from that. How about you guys?
Corey?
Yeah, Billy Beane, that one, good. Michael Lewis, of course, always, he's just a brilliant guy. Always interesting to hear from him. But, and there's a lot of great information. Probably Zach Kass, the former OpenAI executive and researcher too, just got me thinking more about AI, like how I'm probably still underestimating its potential going ahead. But then also we got Dan playing the guitar during our Stansberry social. We need to talk about this, because he killed it. It was amazing. I was blown away, and I know a lot of other people were too. We got to get this music on the podcast somehow. And okay, I've already talked with Damien about that, our audio guy. And
I learned a dangerous lesson.
And it was amazing.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I learned a dangerous lesson from that performance, though, because at the end of it, people were very gracious, and the folks in the front row there yelled encore, encore. And I felt kind of guilty saying, sorry, I'm not going to play anymore. But honestly, I had played the 8 pieces that I remember from 20 years ago. I'm serious. And I sat down, and if you saw me, you're like, boy, he really is. He's not doing so great. Because I thought of one piece I had tried to play, and I played about 5 notes. I thought, oh, well, that's a disaster. I can't play that. And then I thought and thought and thought. And there was another piece. It was the first serious classical guitar piece I studied with my college classical guitar teacher. And I thought, well, I've got that one, right? No, I played a little bit of it and it was okay, but I forgot this whole section. And then I sort of screwed up the end of it and missed a bunch of notes, and then just kind of went bump, bump. Sorry, I forgot. And the dangerous lesson I learned is everybody was okay with that. So from now on, I think instead of handing in like a 5,000 word report each month, I'm just going to do 3,000 words and write, oh shit, I forgot in the last line, and hand that in, and the reader's going to be okay with it. So I told
Greg. No, I thought it was great too.
That he wasn't happy. Yeah. Thank you, Austin.
Yeah, yeah. we talked about right before we started the podcast that, man, I think Corey, great idea. Have Dan Ferris, Steve Sugarud jamming on this podcast. What could be better than that?
Yeah,
that would be
concert
fun.
Episode. Yeah. I like it. Yeah. But that's one of the things about this conference, right? You got your financial talk and plenty of that, but then also, you know, it's entertaining and fun as well. I'm thinking about, we have Dave Barry there, the humor columnist who won a Pulitzer Prize in the 80s. And he was just hilarious. Like, he broke it up in the middle. And I didn't know what to expect from him either, but it was great. So, it's always a fun conference.
Yeah. I very much enjoyed John Amendez, the former, CIA spy. I was fascinated by that. I like spy books. I read all the James Bond books, and I read, you know, Donald Hamilton's Matt Helm books, and et cetera, et cetera. And Raymond Chandler and all kinds of people. And I was just amazed, you know, at, like, she showed disguises. Like, she was like the master of disguise.
Right.
And she told,
right.
Which, you know, it seems when they do it in films and on TV, like, you know, it's the guy, you know, so you're thinking, okay, I'll go along with this, but people don't really do that, but they really do it. And she really did it. And she told a story about one person who said, your disguise saved my life. And, I was fascinated by that. I'm fascinated by spy craft generally. And the time, you know, hiding little printed papers inside of a walnut and just hiding things inside of dead rats. I thought that was particularly clever. I was fascinated anyway. All right. Now that we've talked about music and dead rats and stuff, maybe we'll talk about investing, and maybe just remind our listeners what your role is at Stansberry Asset Management, and what that, like, not just the title, but what does it really mean? What do you really do?
Yeah, thanks, Dan. So I'm Chief Investment Officer. So Stansberry Asset Management is a separate company from Stansberry Research and MarketWise. But it was born, same DNA, same heritage, in the sense that when Steve Sugarroot and Porter Stansberry started Stansberry Research, the idea was, gosh, some of the other alternative and options out there for folks to understand and get good independent research for self-directed investors is not very good. So I want to create a research firm that I would want to use if the roles were reversed. And that's sort of how you all got started. I know, Dan, you started with them shortly thereafter. That was 25 years ago. Some number of years ago, though, subscribers started talking to you, Dan, and Porter and Steve about, well, why don't you just go ahead and manage my money? But that's not the way the research business works. You're independent publishers, and you provide recommendations for your avatar is the average investor, not an individual investor. And so Porter and I met. I was running a hedge fund that was backed by Tiger Management. And my focus was 100% institutional investors and some ultra high net worth investors that were investing with us. And I was so fascinated by his focus and your focus on individual investors. At some point, he convinced me to come work with you all on the research side. And so for some number of years, a little over 4 years, I did that. And the one bridge that we had between kind of, you know, what you all do and what I do now was we started working on something called Portfolio Solutions. And so this was taking all the great research that Stansberry Research does and trying to put it into digestible portfolios that were based on individual goals. But they still were for that general investor. And 3.5 years ago, I switched from Stansberry Research, totally different company, to Stansberry Asset Management. And so our idea is to help those individual investors find a way to take, you know, what they were doing and just sort of optimize it. So we believe that every investor has some combination of three goals. They want to grow their wealth. They want to protect their wealth. They want to generate sturdy current income on that wealth. And again, some combination of those could be your end goal. And so what we want to do is produce and optimize individual portfolios for folks that are based on those goals. And so we're helping high net worth in individual investors with that. We also do financial planning and trying to make sure that we're understanding not just the capital that we're managing for folks, but how that fits into their entire investment and financial plan so that we're more likely to help them get financial success in the long term. And just one more thing, where I started this is we believe wholeheartedly in creating a firm that we'd want to use if the roles were reversed, just like you guys when you started Stansberry Research. And that means we've made certain decisions to try to make this informed, active, sophisticated investment management married with a holistic wealth management. And on top of that, we're eating our own cooking. So myself and every one of the investment members of the investment committee have full fee-paying accounts that sit right alongside our clients. So we have skin in the game for every investment decision that we make.
Oh, that's great. That's good to hear. I didn't know about the financial planning. And I have to admit, I've never really known what that meant. Like when I hear financial planning, I think you're selling mutual funds or something. You know, I don't know what it really means. So what are some of the things you do or one of the things you do for a financial planning client? This is my own curiosity.
Absolutely. So at a high level, I think you can't get to where you want to go, but without knowing where you're starting. And so for our clients that want this service, we will do a full financial plan that's sort of taking a look at their whole balance sheet, all of their assets, not just the ones that we own, that we manage on their behalf, but maybe their house, maybe other things. So we like to look at folks' lives as a financial statement. So we're looking at their balance sheet. We're also looking at their income statement. And then just as you or your team would, or my team, then we're also doing projections. So in evaluating kind of how to invest, we're projecting how their earnings picture will look, what their expenses are over time, where do they want to get? And then the other real key piece to this is understanding the client from a little bit more of a not just a quantitative perspective, but also qualitative. So we may have two clients that they're thinking about their investments for the long term. So you know, they want to grow their portfolio, and so we first think, okay, what are your investment goals? What are your investment time horizon? What is your tolerance for risk? And so we might have someone that's the same on those first two. Their goal is long-term growth, and they have a long-term investment horizon. Maybe they're retired, but they're thinking about their kids or their grandkids. So this capital is something they don't necessarily need in their own life. So they're thinking about legacy. But on that third vector, they're completely different. One person is very tolerant of risk. And then the other family or couple or person is extremely risk averse. We bring in the financial plan to sort of assess that and suss that out. Everyone says that they don't mind risk, but when you go through one of these plans and you kind of talk through things, then you can really understand if that's true or not. It's almost right. Like the Mike Tyson thing. Everyone's got a plan until you get hit in the face. And so
exactly.
Yeah. Yep. You know, it's a helpful exercise. It really is. And I think it makes my team better at investing on their behalf than if we didn't have that piece of it. And one more piece on that, many registered investment advisors that you might meet with it's the same person who's doing the wealth management financial plan that's also picking your investments. And that person might just put you in mutual funds or what have you. At SAM, we have Stansberry Asset Management, or SAM. We have, those are two different teams. I run the investment management team, and then we have a wealth management team. And so you'll have a dedicated wealth manager that's just focused on that financial plan piece of it.
Gotcha. Thank you for that. Thank you for walking
that's
me
invaluable.
Through what,
I mean,
what you do.
Yeah. Yeah. That's like an invaluable thing to do at any point. You know,
yeah.
Check up on that. I remember you writing about that back when you were with us. Just get your financial house in order first, because once you, if you have that taken, I mean, if you don't have that taken care of, a lot of the, what comes next, you know, maybe not matter or be in the wrong direction.
That's right. That's right. We probably have all had a Uber ride where the Uber driver is asking you what's your favorite investment once they learn what you do. And before I say anything, first off, I don't provide stock pitches, but it's the first part of that is, well, listen, how's your financial house in order? Like, if you're racking up credit card debt right now, and that's something we're talking a lot about right now. This is the time to own productive assets, but only when you're not strapped with a lot of high cost debt. That's the first recommendation is, look, get your financial house in order. Like you said, Corey, pay down that high cost debt before you think about trying to pick the next crypto.
That's good advice. People are, I know, I saw some data recently that suggested that the delevering of the American consumer is over and they're back to zero. That's a little problem. And we know consumer, you know, credit card debt is over $1 trillion now. So,
right. Yeah, I think it's a challenging market because and challenging economy, because to your point, we have those folks that don't have assets. So I kind of break it up. If you're a low earner with no or low assets, this is a tough market and economy and place to live. There are folks that have assets that are seeing those appreciate that feel pretty good. So if you have a lot of equity in your home or you're seeing your investment account go up, those folks are still spending. And so when the headline numbers for the economy look pretty strong, but there's certainly a chunk of the economy that is challenged.
Right. Now, do you at SAM engage in any sort of, how shall I say, macro analysis or anything? Does anybody at the firm, you know, pay attention to all the usual, you know, interest rates and employment data and all that kind of stuff?
Yes, we do. I think it's important. And there have been times, for example, that it has absolutely impacted the way we invest. Heading into 2022, when many financial advisors were telling their clients, just set it and forget it, 60% equities, 40% bonds, you're in good shape. We didn't own a single bond for our clients across any of our strategies. Because interest rates were extremely low, as you guys recall, and I know you were talking about this too, Dan. I mean, this was a crazy amount of, you know, trillions of outstanding bonds with negative interest rates. So on the macro, we were highly confident, and the Fed was telling us that interest rates were going up. And so even though people say set it and forget it in your bond portfolio, there are two times when you don't want to own bonds. That's when interest rates are going to be spiking or default rates are going to be spiking. And we weren't so sure about that second one. We had our concerns. We knew for sure interest rates were going up, which will obviously then reduce the value of your existing bonds. Mm-hmm. So The macro story definitely impacts the way we invest.
Interesting. I don't know if I was expecting that answer, because I'll tell you something, Austin. When I, you know, we've talked to hundreds of folks who manage people's money, and almost uniformly across the board, they say, well, we think about it a little bit, but we're bottom-up investors. We're, you know, value-oriented, yeah, bottom-up investors. Almost no one, maybe Cullen Roach comes to mind. And then the other people who say, yes, I already know because they're macro investors. But the other folks who are picking individual stocks and bonds the way you guys are for your clients, they always say, no, not really. But yeah, you just said absolutely, well, yes.
100%. No, I will say, Dan, I think you know about this about me. I'm a little bit of a tweener, though. So the way I would frame this, I would frame this, though, is even if you went back to that example, we still owned world-class businesses for folks. So as I think about the world right now, you and I would agree that the markets are expensive. But I don't want to be all in cash as a result of that. And I know you don't either. So the way we say it is, we want to be strategic at the core of what we own and then tactical around the perimeter. So for me right now, there's two kinds of assets that I want to own in that strategic bucket in the middle. First and foremost, for everyone, again, so long as you're not on credit card debt, but as long as you have a positive, net asset position, every one of those investors should own these world-class businesses that we believe, or that you have high conviction, are durable, well-run, reasonable valuation, high returns on investment, that you believe will be bigger, more profitable businesses a decade from now than they are today. That's our first core. We've got another core that we think are super attractive on a risk-adjusted basis within private credit investments. We can talk about that. But then around the perimeter, we are being more tactical. We are holding a little bit extra dry powder right now. We have, in terms of like on the fixed income side, we have a weird barbell approach. We think that we still own a lot of short-term U.S. treasuries. And then we own some more high-yielding things that are sort of off the run. They're either someone views them as a little bit distressed, and we don't. We think they're money good, or there's something there. They've been orphaned for some reason. One of our favorites are busted convertible bonds, where some smart CFO, honestly, smart CFO, raised capital at a perfect time in 2021. They could raise debt for zero, sometimes zero interest rates, or maybe 0.25. But if the stock did very well, it would convert into equity. And so those bondholders would benefit and benefit better than if they had just owned straight fixed income. But then the stock's cratered. So there's no value in the conversion feature of the bond. Those converts don't have a natural home. They tend to not be rated securities. And the convert arb folks are not invested in that. And so we like to find, so basically my point is, we're, you know, one of the tactical things we do within fixed income is we like both sides and the middle, corporates, corporate bonds, and even high yield bonds, the spread to treasuries, so the incremental return you're getting for the definitive incremental risk is not really attractive for us.
I'm glad to hear you say that, because it's, you know, if you look at that ICE option adjusted index that everybody kind of uses, it's below 3%. I mean, it's like one of the cheapest going back decades right now.
Right.
And I looked at it recently and I was shocked.
In front of me right now. Yeah. You have
the ICE
in front of me right now. I was doing my weekly, you know, look at, you know, no, the charts I like to look at, well, at least once a week or 2 weeks. And yeah, that one's lower, which gets me a little concerned, because now, you know, you get to this point where it's like, are people just complacent now? I don't know. That's another prediction game. But yeah, what I was going to ask you was, Austin, was you don't want to be in cash. I don't necessarily want to be either or too much in cash. Why? Can you explain, you know, why that is?
Yeah, so that's a great question. We do have, for some of our portfolios, cash balances, but the cash is in short-term U.S. Treasuries where we're still generating north of 4% returns in very liquid. We all can argue that a 30-year U.S. Treasury is not necessarily a safe instrument, but a three-month one, I still feel pretty good, is the safety and soundness of that, where we can generate a reasonable rate of return. So we'll sit with some of that. Long term, to your point, and by the way, we also own gold on behalf of our clients, which we think is a better store of value than cash over the long term. And there's no doubt about that. You know, everyone has different analogies or points they make. But you know, when Dan was up on stage, I noticed that he was wearing last week a very nice suit. If he had bought that suit on Saks Fifth Avenue 100 years ago, it would have cost him about an ounce of gold or $25 a share, or $20. Buying that now, it would have cost him about $2,500 to $2,600 or about an ounce of gold. So clearly, the value of money over the long term degrades, and we think that debasement of fiat currencies across the globe will continue. So that's part of the reason, Corey, that you just can't time the market for the core of what you want to do. You need to own those productive assets. We, you know, Corey, you and I have talked about this. It's the best defense right now is for at least part of your portfolio playing offense, owning those productive assets that will protect your purchasing power the way that sitting in cash just simply won't.
Yeah, I agree. I like having the, you know, 4+, close to 5. Some, you know, you get the 1-monthers. Percent yield, just kind of daring me to do something riskier. You know, it's a lot. When interest rates went up, and this is a couple of years ago at the Las Vegas conference, I said, the good news is investing is back, because now right. You have this risk-free rate of return, and it's back to, it's actually more normal than it was when, you know, the 10-year went to 0.4% yield during the pandemic or whatever. Yeah. So it's more normal, and that's a good thing. Also, I have to say, for the benefit of our listener, I really like hearing a rational, fully hinged, sophisticated investor like Austin saying that he owns gold. Usually, it's my crew that's saying that he should own gold. But this Austin is the real deal, right? He's not like me. He's the real deal, and he owns gold, and you heard the good things he said about it. And he knows that I dress well, too, so that's valuable.
That's right. Now, I would say this, that maybe is controversial for some of your investors or some of your listeners and subscribers. And that is that while gold is superior to dollar, any fiat currency, cash, in terms of as being a store of value long term, I expect it to be inferior to owning those world-class businesses at stocks over the long term. Those will generate, you know, I expect earnings power growth, and whereas I think of gold as protecting your value, not necessarily enhancing it. I don't know how you feel about that. I know there are certain gold bugs that say, look, nah, over time it's going to even do better. But I'm not sure.
I'll go you one better, Austin. When you know you have the like Dow gold ratio, whatever, it's like 18 or 20 or something. When it goes to like, you know, 9 or 5 or something, I'm selling gold and putting that money into stocks and apps. And even though gold has beat the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ this century so far, these two decades, that's, you know, I don't expect that. And also, that's not necessarily your benchmark. You know, you guys, you're picking the very best, most productive, most capital efficient, cash gushing, good balance sheet, good asset, good management businesses. And we're trying to do the same thing in the Extreme Value newsletter. And across Stansberry, we generally do that. So, you know, maybe we'll do even better. So, that's
a
good thing. It's not
as wealth preservation. I mean, yes, of course. I never thought I'd be this when I got into this world, investing world. I never thought I would be bullish on gold as much as I am right now, just given everything I've learned along the way about currency debasement and what the central banks seem to have just going on as business as usual after a 40-year high in inflation. It's like they don't care. We've learned nothing. But gold, you know, is gold. And to a certain extent, I think Bitcoin maybe too, for a different crew of investors as well, may catch on more. Whether or not it is an inflation hedge, you know, it may be believed to be that more and more.
100%. I mean, I think that neither one is a very good store of value of the short term because of the volatility. And that's especially true of Bitcoin. But the longer you look out, we think it could be a fabulous store of value. And exactly right. For certain clients that have that long-term focus, it is a good thing. And, you know, we own it on behalf of certain clients. Count us in for Bitcoin as well. Not as much some of the other cryptos where there's this challenge between the scarcity value of something that makes something have less utility. A lot of those cryptos, you talk about how valuable they are, but then you can't use them as much. Ethereum, the fees to be on the Ethereum blockchain, if ETH goes up to 5,000 or whatever, then you'll just go use something else that's cheaper. So anyway, not to get on that tangent, but we think of Bitcoin as a good store of value as well for those that can hold it long term.
All right. Yeah, I own Bitcoin. I don't own Bitcoin right now. I've missed out. I was bullish some time ago and it worked out well, but I haven't gotten back into it. We don't even need to get into why. We'll just move on.
No.
So I just want to make clear though. Usually, you know, we on the show, we like to tell listeners like how to fish and then maybe feed them a fish, but it sounds like you prefer not to do that. You prefer not to name individual stocks. Am I right about that?
I can do it. You know, the way that we talk about this is, I don't do stock pitches per se, but what we do, we talk about things, and I'm happy to do this in the context of an example of the type of company or investment we like for a certain strategy. So I did have two in mind for this that we maybe get into one, and then if we got time and you're interested, we can talk about another one. But you know, Dan, I think you've done a good job of pointing out to folks that the market's expensive, and by many different measures. You and I could argue, I think we did even talk a little bit about whether the CAPE ratio, for example, is as valid now as it was 30 years ago for different reasons. We could talk about it, but even if you agreed with me, you'd still be hard pressed to say that the market is attractively priced. So we're trying to find businesses and opportunities that are trading at a reasonable valuation relative to our long-term outlook for that business, and ideally at a discount to the overall market. One that I'll share with you that folks will know, will have heard of, in the context of we own this for folks that are looking for durable businesses, but long-term growth. So today's best businesses that we believe will be tomorrow's best businesses as well. with the idea that they're going to grow. And one of those that we own is American Express. So American Express trades at a discount to the overall market multiple, even though it has historically, and we believe will continue to grow at a much, much faster pace than the overall economy and then the overall S&P 500 average earnings. So American Express has a business that which is for most of its profits, like Visa or MasterCard. They are a credit card network that facilitates all sorts of payments across their network and really makes it easier for commerce to happen. There has been over the last 40 years, and there continues to be a transition from physical in-cash payments to digital payments going over credit card networks, taking more and more share of not just consumer payments, but all sorts of transfer payments and payments, exchanges of goods and value. And they're benefiting from that. So we can see that American Express will continue to be a double digit revenue grower, even in a scenario where the economy and markets don't grow that fast. We think earnings grow even faster than that. It's one of these businesses. If you talk about, are there businesses that you think will do well in an inflationary environment? Well, if that washing machine that you had to buy was $1,000 10 years ago and it's $2,000 now, some businesses may not generate as much profits from that. Well, what American Express gets paid on that, that's a small part of the fee, will have effectively doubled. It makes it, for most of what it does, is a percentage of the total transaction value. So it's an incredible inflation hedge. In fact, it's one of the best inflation hedge type of businesses out there because the cost of American Express didn't double over that period. And so you can actually, in some cases, see them make more money. Now, one risk is there is a part of their portfolio for which they're taking credit risk. And so that is a concern just to follow that. Their customers tend to be businesses and higher net worth. And those people of the economy we talked about that are still feeling okay. So their loss ratios are very, very low. But they've also tended to gain share in downturns. So that's an example of business that, gosh, I'm confident will be everyone likes how the credit card networks work. If we were to start the business today, we may have done it differently, but currently consumers, businesses, it all works for all of us. And even when we've had new technologies enter, they basically end up partnering. Apple Pay partners with the credit card networks, you know, et cetera. So that's a business where we think that is a productive asset for folks to own.
Right. Yeah. Visa, American Express. I think we have Visa in extreme value. And they're hard not to use, aren't they? To pay for things in this world, it's hard not to use them, I think.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. That's right.
I love that point about it being in a great inflation hedge just based on, you know, what its business is as well.
Right. Yeah. And we own Visa on behalf of clients. They're also looking for growth. And that's an incredible business, and they don't have the credit risk ish component to it. Trades at a higher multiple, so there's, you know, it's one of those you know, things that you have to be okay with.
I know it's true. You provide a lot of insight, Austin. So I'm not saying that you don't, but as you point out, you know, Visa's expensive, and everybody knows this, right? At this point, it's well known. Here we are, and they keep growing, right? I mean,
I wanted to ask you, have you guys had Meb Faber on the podcast, or have you been on his podcast? Yeah,
both.
We've had him on. Yeah,
he talks, and he's been to the. I know he's done things with Stansberry Research in the past. He talks about a concept called shareholder yield.
I know it well. Yeah.
And I think that, so when for folks that that for that's an interest. So we own a business that people haven't heard of for folks that are looking for income to generate income. And our income strategy includes this concept of shareholder yield. So it's not just the dividends and coupon payments, but it's also if you're retiring shares or paying down debt, you effectively as a shareholder, when a company retires those shares, you own more of the business over time. And so it can be a very, very good way to think about returning capital to shareholders and getting a return, getting a shareholder yield. And a name that's a great example of something we're looking for that trades at a discount to the market, trades at a discount to its peers, is called CRH. CRH is the third largest construction materials company in the world. It traditionally was an Irish company, although it lists now listed on in New York. It's 60%. It's 60% in the U.S., but we think of it as a world-class business that is making those right capital allocation decisions. So it has a business that will benefit from infrastructure, needed infrastructure plans, aggregate, road building, et cetera, trades at a discount to the market, only has a 1.5% or 2% dividend yield, but its shareholder yield is approaching 10% because it's retiring shares at an attractive price. It trades at a significant discount to the more traditional players in this space, like Martin Marietta, for example. So that's one where we really like it. And it's almost, if you just screen for dividend yields, you wouldn't appreciate how much it's returning capital to shareholders.
Yeah, man, I'm on board with this concept. I've actually recommended MEB's SYLD fund in one of my newsletters. And for years in the Extreme Value newsletter, we evaluate every stock based on the five financial clues. And one of those clues is essentially shareholder yield. The two of the components, actually, another clue, we have all the components of it. We have the balance sheet, you know, the debt pay down, and we have the dividends and share repurchases is another clue. So I've long been a big believer in this. And I even admit, and I print this, there's a little blurb about the dividends and repurchases clue in every issue. And I even admit that most companies aren't great share repurchasers, right? Most companies don't, you know, they're not Warren Buffett waiting for the, you know, thing to trade at 1.2 times book or whatever he's up to now. I think he might have raised it to 1.3 or abandoned it entirely or something. But it's rare that you get a disciplined share repurchaser like that. And it kind of almost doesn't matter if the business is great enough because it keeps growing. And over time, a fantastic business that continues to grow and continues to have a durable competitive advantage, it takes time, but it proves to you that it was cheaper 10 years ago than you thought it was. So that's why they can get away with that, right? It's brilliant and it works.
Yeah. I think there was a time that folks thought, well, gosh, if they're just buying back their own shares, they can't find anything interesting to invest in, be it M&A or some new project. And this is a big negative. But time and again, we've seen that those, to your point, those executives that were smart with their capital allocation, that invested and bought back shares at the right times, have benefited shareholders far more than some expensive acquisition.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And one of the benefits that I talk about now and then to dividends and share repurchases is that it imposes discipline on the management. It takes the excess cash out of their pockets. And we all know, you know, most of us at some point in our youth, perhaps, or throughout our lives, at some point, we've had cash in our pockets burning a hole in it. and we spent it when we probably shouldn't have. And people who run big corporations are no different. You know, they think they got to do something. Well, we got all this capital, we got to do something, and that can be dangerous. So getting it out of their hands and using it in a still productive manner to buy back the shares is, it's got more than just one benefit for the shareholder. All right. So we've got two ideas. We got American Express and CRH. So that's great.
Right.
Very cool. I do want to ask, we're coming out along around election time here. How do you factor in the presidential election and or, global geopolitics into what you do? We got wars still going in Ukraine and the Middle East, still developing new things every day. And of course the election, I was hearing people today, on radio talk about how it seems like a lot of investors are in just kind of a holding pattern on things until the election passes. What do you think how do you think about it?
Yeah, no, we do. We think about a lot of those, both of those things quite a bit. Maybe focusing on the election piece of it. I think we try to understand and suss out if certain candidates were elected, how that would impact it, particularly in the case where there's a sweep, where Congress and the White House are the same way, then more things can get done. And are those going to be positive or negative for certain sectors and certain companies? We do that, but at the same time, also generally recommend to our clients, for the most part, to keep politics out of their portfolio when thinking longer term. First piece of that is there's been some studies done where if the party that you support is in power in the White House, you feel more optimistic about the world, and people have invested on that behalf. And when markets go up, that's great. But if your party is not in power, that's been to your detriment if markets are going up. Similarly, if things tank, it can be a challenge to you. So people have actually, looking at the data, and folks have done this, it's a fascinating exercise. I think more important to us, though, is it's not only hard to predict how the election will go, but it also is hard to predict if stocks and certain sectors will be impacted the way you expect. So I'll just give one example. In 2019, on the campaign trail, Biden's quote was, let me make sure I have it right. I guarantee you we're going to end fossil fuel. Not only did that not happen once he won, but we're now producing more oil and fossil fuels than ever before. And energy stocks. So that should have been bad for energy stocks, right? Since he took office to today, energy stocks have nearly doubled the S&P. They've done great, and they've nearly doubled the S&P. So it's a challenging thing to impact your entire portfolio with that. We do, however, want to, so there are other pieces of this that are important for us. We do think inflation will be a thing for a while. We may be able to tame it in the near term, but long term, we want to have those companies that have purchasing power, pricing power, because we see inflation being a thing. And that is basically the one thing that both candidates agree on, that they're going to just keep printing money and deficit spend, and the national debt be damned. So the way we're going to do that is own industry leaders. So if we get into a downturn, they can benefit and take share in that, and own those businesses that have productive pricing power and good returns on invested capital, because you do not want to be in a situation when you own companies that for which none of those are true. By the way, balance sheets need to have good balance sheets as well. On the geopolitical front, we probably are a little bit overweight in general on defense names and names that benefit from government spending. And that's been the right place to be, particularly when we like those businesses long term. And I think we'll continue to do that.
Yeah, I've got a few of those in, likes to hear that. In both newsletters. Yeah.
I have a question for you. Maybe that relates to the question I have for both of you. You both write excellent daily pieces to folks. I know, Dan, you're generally once a week, and Corey, you're 3, 4, 5 times a week, depending on the week. How are the politics and the current events impacting the way you're thinking about the world? When I think we probably would all agree most investors should be focused long term for the most part, and yet there are some short term things that can really, really impact things. How are you thinking about elections or other short term things, and is it impacting your recommendations or the way that you invest?
Corey, you want to go first?
Sure. It's rare we get a question, so this is nice. I was just thinking about this today, actually, with the election, and it seems like there's this growing belief out there that, you know, and this is just short-term thing. Like I'm with you on, bet on what won't change, which is deficit spending, inflation continuing, high quality companies, all of that. But when you're looking at the short-term direction of the market, there seems to be this growing belief that Trump's gonna win, and I see the headlines about it at least. You look back historically, every time the market's been up in the prior 3 months before an election, the incumbent, well, not every time, 85% of the time since, I think, in the last 100 years when the market's been up, the incumbent or incumbent party has won the White House. So to me, you know, and obviously if there's a recession involved in that, that's another indicator we haven't had a technical recession. So to me, I don't know if Harris ends up winning, actually, I think things could be a little volatile afterward based on the fact that the expectations now seem to be favoring Trump. But we'll see very soon. We will see very soon.
So there's two things for me here. One of them is the actual bet on who's going to win and whether or not there is a bet. I bet on Trump to win in 2016 because he was plus 350, and I think Hillary was like minus, you know, like 120 or something. You know, basically, you bet 120 to win 100. So that was, you know, kind of sucky odds for her, meaning she was absolutely a shoe-in, and plus 350 is bet 100 to win 350. So, wow, okay. And it worked out. But I didn't see a bet in 2020. I still don't see a bet here, although it's getting there. There might be a bet on Harris to win if the odds keep spreading and spreading from here, but I don't see it yet. You know, they're still both under 200, like plus or minus 200. So no bet yet. And as an investing proposition, I implore people to ignore it. I really do. Whitney said in Vegas, right? In 2016, people said, if Trump wins, I'm leaving the country. And in, you know, they said the same thing in 2020, I'm leaving the country or I'm selling out. I'm selling all my stocks.
Right.
Those bets were wrong both times, as Whitney pointed out in Vegas. And it'll be wrong this time too. And in both cases, what will you get for you're not sure what you're going to get, but 4 years from now, you're probably going to pay more for stuff. There's going to be more debt. There's going to be higher spending. You know, they're going to spend, they're going to accrue debt. Stuff is going to cost more. And they're both, I believe, going to make attempts to infringe on civil liberties. Trump has said he put people in jail for burning the flag. And Kamala said she favors mandatory gun buybacks. So, I don't think this election will be any different from any other. Those threats are always there with all the candidates, generally speaking. And yet we still have a really great life. And I think that'll continue. And you shouldn't sell all your stocks if one or the other candidate wins because you think they're going to end, you know, the world as we know it. So I'm still there. I can't place an investment bet on either one of these guys. I just can't do it. I've done it in the past and it's always been a mistake. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I can't say I've placed a bet on either one of them, you know, in an investing, in an investment, you know, that has to do with either one of them other than that, inflation's going to probably reaccelerate. Yeah. I feel like, and, you know, long-term the prices of everything are going to go up. So.
Although I had a good idea.
Good. Sorry.
I was going to say I had a good idea in 2016 for Trump, but I didn't pull the trigger. I had my computer. It was, you know, it was election night. I had my computer. I was ready to stay up and like short the peso, and it freaking tanked, and S&P 500 futures tanked, but I just didn't have the guts to pull the trigger. I wish I had done it because it was the best crisis ever. It was over in a heartbeat and you made a ton of money, you know, it's just like, oh, well. So,
yeah, anyway. I think there's countervailing forces. I do think it's reasonable to argue that Trump is more pro-business and that the economy could grow potentially faster with him. So that's bullish for equities. But everything he's talking about, the deficit could be higher for him as well, and the number of people in our in the U.S. that are on the dole from the government could grow higher, and deficits and the national debt. So that's not positive for the long term. And so there's countervailing forces I think that we see. And to your point, Corey, in either case, we want to own this productive assets because either candidate's going to spend and debase. We see inflation as an issue.
Right. I think it always will be, right? It's, when you have a fiat currency, people are people. If they can print money, they will. You know, they want to make promises. They want to entice people to vote for them, and so they will borrow and print. And that's just the way life is. So we have to accept it and own businesses like Visa and American Express. And insurance companies are another, property insurance companies are another decent bet on inflation, I think.
Absolutely.
And and do our best with that. So we've reached the moment of our final question. And a final question is the same for every guest, no matter what the topic. And if you've already said the answer, by all means, feel free to repeat it. But the question is very simple. If you could leave our listener with a single thought today, what would you like it to be?
I think that the first thing that pops up into my head, and I actually hadn't prepared for this. I think last time I was on, I did have prepared, but this is top of mind for me, or just off the top of my head. We started by talking about how great it would have been, Dan, or if we could ever do this, having you and Steve Sugar Root up playing guitars, and maybe we could do that at some point. But one of the core tenets that he talked about was trying to own things that were cheap, hated, and in an uptrend. And so I don't want to leave folks with that. I think that's I think most of the time that works. I don't think it always works, but gosh, it's a pretty great way to sort of think about it.
Good screen.
What I caution folks about, particularly in this market where the prices are elevated, and it just feels like more and more pundits and investors are expecting a soft soft landing or a no landing situation, is be very wary of those stocks that are expensive, loved, and in a downtrend. So that opposite of what Steve's talking about there, and they're out there. Excellent. And I think it's just be careful. There's some things that people are hoping will regain momentum, but you're trying to regain momentum from a very expensive part of the market, and particularly for a lot of these stocks. So we are making sure to avoid those scenarios as much as we are trying to find world-class businesses or things that are cheap, hated in an uptrend?
I think you know me well enough to know that I love that answer. I love it to death. Thank you. It's excellent.
Yeah.
And cool. And thanks for being here. I really appreciate it. It's always a pleasure to talk with you, man.
Absolutely. Fantastic. Thank you both for having me on, and look forward to seeing what happens in the next couple of weeks, and maybe we can come back and think about what to do next.
Yeah, will do.
Thanks, Corey. Thanks, Dan.
You bet. Well, it's always fun to talk with our old friend, Austin Root, who's also a very intelligent, experienced, sophisticated, knowledgeable investor as well. And we got a couple of good ideas. So a couple of good stocks. It's everything you, as a Stansberry Investor Hour listener, that you could hope for. And fun stories and all kinds of stuff. It was great.
Yeah. What else do you want? I mean, I'm sure you could tell us, but that was pretty good. You know, the two stocks give you an idea of everything leading up to that too gives you an idea of how he thinks that over at SAM, and applying, you know, obviously our research and other research as well to creating client portfolios, and then obviously how he goes about picking the stocks. And so, yeah, really smart guy. As always, you know, able to, I like the point. I mean, a lot of the points, you know, are things we talk about all the time, but, just that point about even the cash, you know, he's more favorable to the gold than sitting in cash, which is something you wouldn't hear, I think, from most, institutional portfolio managers, at least. Just kind of shows you. If they're not like everybody else.
I know. It's like I said, it's great to hear a fully hinged, rational investor saying, right. Hey, yo, it's gold, right? You know, yeah. Rather than me. So yeah, I agree.
You're not hinged, or you're not fully hinged. Yeah, come on.
Yeah. Semi hinged, you know, yeah. I'm semi hinged.
Yeah. We got to find a way to get your guitar, riffs on here. Not riffs. Riffs is insulting. Yeah. It's we gotta figure out where to place this music is my
all right
one of my takeaways as well.
All right, well, maybe we can record a little something for the outro or something. I don't know. We'll figure perfect. It out if the masses require it. I don't know. You know, I'll certainly serve them faithfully. But yeah. And, you know, if we can get Steve on here too, that'd be nice too. That was not a terrible idea. And if he's ever up for it, you know, it's fine with me. I'm happy to do so.
Yeah. Take my spot. There we go.
well, you know, he doesn't have to take your spot, but he can show up and play a little music
I'm not playing the guitar. Yeah. I'm not playing the guitar, I can tell you that. Yeah. Okay.
No, that's okay. At any rate, it's funny that you and I do this, Corey, where we have these interviews and then afterwards we tell our listeners how great they were. I mean, this just struck me as the, you know, what we tell them after every interview. That was really great. If you didn't think it was great, you're wrong. But the point is really to sum things up and point out the, you know, the highlights. You know, he thinks you should own American Express, you know, and the other company mentioned, which was definitely, he's right. It's a lesser known company, CRH. I thought that was great. I was glad to hear CRH. I knew those guys owned American Express, and I knew he was really, you know, he really liked that business. But you know, we got another one that is not the usual name that is thrown out by anyone really. I've never heard anyone talk about that company. So jot it down and do your own homework and decide whether or not you want to own CRH. All right, that was fun. As fun as any interview we ever have here, which is to say a lot of it for Corey and I and our guest. And that was another episode of the Stansberry Investor Hour. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we very truly did. We do provide a transcript for every episode. Just go to www.investorhour.com. Click on the episode you want, scroll all the way down, click on the word transcript, and enjoy. If you like this episode and know anybody else who might like it, tell them to check it out on their podcast app or at investorhour.com, please. And also, do me a favor, subscribe to the show on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And while you're there, help us grow with a rate and a review. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Our handle is at Investor Hour. On Twitter, our handle is at @investor_hour. Have a guest you want us to interview? Drop us a note at feedback@investorhour.com or call our listener feedback line, 800-381-2357. Tell us what's on your mind and hear your voice on the show. For my co-host, Corey McLaughlin, until next week, I'm Dan Ferris. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Stansberry Investor Hour. To access today's notes and receive notice of upcoming episodes, go to investorhour.com and enter your email. Have a question for Dan? Send him an email, feedback@investorhour.com. This broadcast is for entertainment purposes only and should not be considered personalized investment advice. Trading stocks and all other financial instruments involves risk. You should not make any investment decision based solely on what you hear. Stansberry Investor Hour is produced by Stansberry Research and is copyrighted by the Stansberry Radio Network.
Opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the contributor and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Stansberry Research, its parent company, or affiliates. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this program as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of opinion. Neither Stansberry Research nor its parent company or affiliates warrant the completeness or accuracy of the information expressed on this program, and it should not be relied upon as such. Stansberry Research, its affiliates and subsidiaries are not under any obligation to update or correct any information provided on the program. The statements and opinions expressed on this program are subject to change without notice. No part of the contributor's compensation from Stansberry Research is related to the specific opinions they express. Past performance is not indicative of future results. Stansberry Research does not guarantee any specific outcome or profit. You should be aware of the real risk of loss in following any strategy or investment discussed on this program. Strategies or investments discussed may fluctuate in price or value. Investors may get back less than invested. Investments or strategies mentioned on this program may not be suitable for you. This material does not take into account your particular investment objectives, financial situation, or needs, and is not intended as a recommendation that is appropriate for you. You must make an independent decision regarding investments or strategies mentioned on this program. Before acting on information on the program, you should consider whether it is suitable for your particular circumstances and strongly consider seeking advice from your own financial or investment advisor.